Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
You may have never noticed it, but on the corner of this building, cornerstone, and it has engraved on it part of the words from the text that was read this morning about Jesus Christ Himself being the chief cornerstone. I saw that leaving the parking lot one morning, not long after I'd been here, and I just decided I'm going to preach some sermon. I brought a lesson at that time on this text about Jesus Christ Himself being the chief cornerstone and what it meant to be the temple of the Lord. Not talking about any physical structure, but that spiritual temple. But I just thought I'd name this lesson The Tale of Three Temples. But I want to talk about that temple in Jerusalem, that temple in Ephesus, and then the spiritual temple which is of which we're a part, which is the Lord's church. Let's start with that temple in Jerusalem. It had a long history and heritage. It goes way back to some of the early days of the Old Testament. It's while the children of Israel were in the wilderness between Egyptian and Canaan when the Lord came and gave them the instructions for that temple. It says in Exodus chapter 25 and in verse 8, "Let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I have shown thee, after the pattern of the tabernacle, and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, so shall you make it." It's called a tabernacle. That's just a fancy word for a tent. The idea for this started off in the mind of God, it would just be a tent. And He said three things there. First, it would be a sanctuary. In other words, sanctuary is a holy place is what that is. It's talking about something that is set apart. It's been sanctified. It isn't going to be a common tent. I want it set apart for a special purpose. You know, sometimes people refer to the place where we meet to worship God as the sanctuary. Well, that word kind of carries that idea with it in people's language, but it's not because this is a holy place, and that's not the way the Bible uses that term. The Bible's talking about that temple is something that has been set apart for that specific purpose of worshiping God. It'll be a place where God will dwell among them. Exactly what all that means, I don't think we understand. I don't claim to. But that was a presence of God that was with Israel, that was associated with that tabernacle. And then it was to be built according to the pattern. It wasn't to be just built any way you want to. He gave Moses a pattern. We read about that pattern in the chapters of Exodus, beginning in chapter 25 here, all the way through 31. He described all the things He wanted that temple to be like. And then we read how they built that tabernacle. I called it temple, but then it was a tabernacle. Built that tabernacle according to the pattern in Exodus 35 and verse 40. It might be a nice trick sometime to take two Bibles and open it up to those chapters and read what God said and read what they did, page after page after page. It's kind of tedious reading, but it is a grand illustration of what it means to obey God, because they built it according to the pattern as God said. And then an amazing thing happened at the conclusion of the book of Exodus. When they were finished and they were dedicating that for its purpose, a cloud came down and covered that tabernacle. And the glory of God shone from within that tabernacle, and it was so great that Moses was not able to enter into that tabernacle. They came to the promised land, and they pitched that tabernacle at Shiloh. And there it remained through the period of the judges and the rule of King Saul and the rule of King David. But there was a problem there. The people's lives did not conform to the manner in which God wanted them to live. The sons of Eli, the priests, were officiating at that tabernacle, and they lived wicked lives. And they thought, simply because that tabernacle was there and they had the instruments of it, that somehow that's some kind of good omen from God or good favor from God. And they didn't have to have their lives conformed to His will as long as they had these implements. They went out to fight against the Philistines carrying that Ark of the Covenant before them, thinking that was going to be some kind of special charm so they'd win the battle. And the Philistines defeated them, and that ark was taken, and the sons of Eli were put to death. So it was a shame there at Shiloh. It was supposed to be for the glory of God, but it did not work out. They forsook God. David wanted to build a temple. He saw that the Lord was dwelling in tents, and he had his fine house he was living in. He said, why should the Lord dwell in tents? And in his mind, he said, I'll build him a tabernacle. But the prophet Nathan came and said, no, David, the Lord does not want you to do that, but to leave that to your son. And Solomon did build that temple. And like the tabernacle of old that had a pattern, David gave Solomon the pattern from God on how to build that temple. And so Solomon built the temple in Jerusalem according to the pattern. And like it was out in the wilderness when the dedication of that, the glory of God shone from within that temple. And it was so great and so bright that the priests could not enter into it to officiate. Now God warned them in 2 Chronicles chapter 7 verses 19 through 22. He said, if you turn away from me, this house which is sanctified by my name, I will cast it out of my sight, and it will become an astonishment to everyone that passes by. It wasn't just enough just to have the physical implements of the temple there. God wanted the people's hearts and the people's lives, but the problem was they didn't forsake God. And that grand temple that was built by Solomon fell into disrepair. And there were two attempts to restore the temple and the worship associated with that, but they were short-lived and they did not have a lingering effect. Jeremiah the prophet came warning Israel, God is going to bring destruction on this city for your wickedness, for your forsaking Him. And they said in Jeremiah chapter 7 and verse 4, the temple of the Lord is here. Just like they were in Shiloh, thinking just having that there was some kind of a good omen or protection from God. And Jeremiah explained to them in Jeremiah 7, 8 through 15, don't count on the temple of the Lord being here. You remember what happened when the tabernacle was in Shiloh. And just like it was in Shiloh, he quoted those words that he'd given through Solomon. He says, I'm going to cast you out of my sight. And Nebuchadnezzar did come. And Nebuchadnezzar destroyed that temple and carried the implements and placed them in the house of the temples and the shrines that were erected to the false gods of Babylon. And there they stayed while Israel was in captivity. And then King Cyrus arose, a king of Persia. He conquered Babylon. He told the Jews they could go back if they wanted to and rebuild their temple. And so they went back, and that temple was rebuilt. Now, during the period between the Testaments, there's an interesting story associated with that temple. There is a ruler by the name of Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. He gave himself that name. It's quite a high-sounding name. And he wanted the Jews to be more like the Greeks. And so they call it Hellenizing the culture. And he saw that old worship of the Jews that was associated with that temple as something that was hindering them from their progress. And so he thought he would just kind of beat it into them and force them into becoming Hellenistic. He went into Jerusalem and turned the temple that Ezra had rebuilt into a shrine to the Olympian god Zeus. And to demonstrate his contempt for the religion of the Jews, he sacrificed a pig on the altar. Well, the plan backfired. A fellow named Judas Maccabees arose and raised a rebellion against Antiochus and against that whole kingdom. And Israel put forth such resistance that they were able for a time to gain their independence and existed as an independent state. And so that happened. In between the Testaments, you don't read about that except in prophecy in the Bible, some points of it. But that's what happened in between. In fact, to this day, at this season of the year, when the Jews celebrate Hanukkah, what they're doing is celebrating that period of time in which Judas Maccabees was able to throw off Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes and gain their independence. Now, through the heirs of Judas Maccabees, through marriage into that family, King Herod arose. And king ruled over Jerusalem. And like Antiochus Epiphanes before him, he really wanted the Jews to be more like the Greeks. He wanted them to be Hellenized. But he didn't go about it the same way. Rather than oppose their worship, he decided to embrace it. And he told them, I'll build you a temple that's more glorious than any temple that's ever been built here. And so they got to work on that temple, and they worked on it. In fact, when Christ was referring to his own body and said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it up, they said to Christ, 46 years has this temple been under construction, and you're going to raise it up in 3 days? Of course, he was talking about himself and not that temple. But Christ would have been around 30 years old and had already been working on that for 46 years. In fact, they worked on that temple for about 90 years. And that was the temple that you read about in the New Testament. They had great pride in that temple. In Matthew chapter 23 and verse 38, when Jesus had had all he could take from the corruption that was associated with the Jews and the manner in which they were serving God, he said in Matthew chapter 23 and verse 38, this house is left unto you desolate. And then Jesus left that temple for the last time. That was truly when the presence of God abandoned the temple. Well, the apostles and the Jews, they all took great pride in their temple. And in Matthew 24, the apostles said, oh, look at the beautiful temple and all the buildings. And Jesus said that not one stone would be left upon another. And he said later in that same chapter that these things would happen in this generation before that generation was over at A.D. 70. Because of the Jews' rebellion against Rome, thinking they could rebel against Rome the way Judas Maccabees had rebelled earlier against the Seleucid Empire, those Romans came down and they destroyed that temple. And they removed every stone and leveled that temple to the ground. Now, past the New Testament time, about 50 years after that, there was another emperor of Rome, Hardin. He came and rebuilt a temple there that was more like a shrine to the Roman god Jupiter on the Temple Mount, much like that Zeus that's where that temple had been built earlier. I don't know where that temple went. Evidently, it wasn't embraced by the local population. About 600 A.D., the Muslims came in and occupied that land, and they built the Dome of the Rock over that temple site. It's been standing there now for about 1,300 years. And so in the pictures of Jerusalem, you see that gold dome. That's that Muslim shrine. And that building has stood there longer than any other structure that had ever been built on that mountain. Now, let's talk about another temple. I want to talk about the temple at Ephesus. This is a pagan temple. You don't read a lot about it in the Bible, but I did do some research on it to see what its significance was. The story is told that the image of Diana had fallen from the sky. Most of the commentators say, you know, this could have been a meteorite. And from whatever fell from the sky, they instructed an image and built a shrine to her. And the city of Ephesus grew up around that shrine. In fact, the city of Ephesus was there because of that shrine. And it was burned and rebuilt six times. And each time they rebuilt it, they expanded on it and made it more glorious than it had been before. And then finally a madman, because he wanted his name to be known, went and burned it again. And after that seventh time, and it just so happened, the seventh time that temple in Ephesus was burned, it was the same night as the birth of Alexander the Great. It was a time in which the Greek culture was flourishing and growing. And those rich Ephesians decided, we're going to build a temple here that's been unlike anything that has ever been, and they built it grander than ever. The temple they finally constructed was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. It had 127 columns that were 60 feet high. 36 of these columns were covered in gold and decked out with jewels and done with intricate carvings. And so it was a great thing in Ephesus. It was known throughout the Mediterranean world. There's this great temple to Diana of the Ephesians in the city of Ephesus, and pilgrimages would be made. It became very important culturally to them. It became a museum. It became a bank because of all of the donations given to them. And the priest would loan money out just like our banks would and collect interest on that money and try to increase their profits. And so it became very important economically. And the pilgrims that would come would buy little shrines or little images of Diana to take with them. When Paul started preaching the gospel there, why, the people started taking a lot of their magic books and stuff and burning them. And as the gospel began to spread throughout Asia, people quit buying those shrines. And it created such a fuss in Ephesus that those that were still interested in that temple gathered together in Acts chapter 19 and verse 28 and yelled out for the space of 3 hours, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians! Great is Diana of the Ephesians!" Christianity continued to spread. The interest in that temple began to fade away. That temple, while it was an economic asset, turned into an economic liability. One of the problems with that temple was the foundation of that temple. When they built it, they were afraid that the earthquakes in the area would bring that temple down. So they went out on the floodplain and built it out on the floodplain and made a massive foundation for this massive temple. But everything was so heavy that the whole temple started sinking into the mud. And there was great expense involved in trying to keep that temple up with that foundation. But as people began to lose faith in paganism and embrace Christianity, little by little the interest in that temple fell off until finally it was no longer maintained. And the drainage ways were not maintained. And when the river would flood, it would put silt out over the city, and the city was abandoned. And the temple came tumbling down. And it was covered in the silt. And it was actually the site of that temple was lost until 1870 when it was rediscovered. Now, there may be a remnant of that cult, of that Diana worship, that is carried on to this day in the worship of Mary as the Mother of God. Several things that point to that. One is that this thing came about at a time when the church from Rome was thinking that the best way to win over the rest of these pagans is just to embrace their religions and incorporate that into Christianity. It was also in 431 A.D. when a council of the church met in Ephesus and decided that that term of Mary, Mother of God, would be sanctioned by the Roman church. One of the earliest churches built in honor of Mary. We see these churches of Our Lady of this and Our Lady of that. One of those earliest churches was built there in Ephesus. And to this day, you can go to a house, an ancient Roman house, near the city of Ephesus, that is called the House of the Virgin Mary. And people go there as a shrine to Mary. And so those are reasons people think that perhaps that cult of Diana, some elements of it, are living on to this day. Now let me tell you about the greatest temple that was ever built. And that's the temple we read about in our text. And unlike these temples made of stones, it wasn't made of material things, it's made of spiritual things. It had a sure foundation. It tells us that the foundation was the foundation of the apostles and prophets. And that's referring to the doctrine that they taught. That faith that we have, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, is the foundation for the spiritual temple. Jesus Christ Himself is the chief cornerstone. Now you think what a cornerstone is to a building. Well, it sets the standard for the rest of that building. Everything else is built to align itself with a cornerstone and to conform with that cornerstone. And those blocks that can be built to conform with what the cornerstone is intended is added to that building. And so also Jesus is that standard. And we're to conform ourselves unto Him to be added to that temple. The stones are not marble. They are living stones. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 5. Hebrews calls them the souls of just men made perfect. Just like God had a pattern and a plan for that tabernacle, Well, there's a pattern for His church, and every stone in that church is there by God's design. All of us are here with God wanting us to be here. That's why it's called, it's fitly framed together and builded together. That house in Ephesians, that temple there, how's this image that they said fell from the sky? It was really a grotesque image from the descriptions of it. We read about the temple in Jerusalem, that the glory of God had shone from outside of that. And it tells us about this temple in Ephesus that we are growing into a holy temple unto the Lord, and to be a habitation of God through the Spirit. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 16 says, "Ye are the temple of God, and the Spirit of God dwelleth with you." And so God's presence on this earth, one of the ways that is seen is through us, as we conform our lives to that cornerstone in His church. That temple in Jerusalem was built in 90 years, or they'd worked on it 90 years when the Romans came and destroyed it. It said that the temple in Ephesus, it took 220 years to build that temple. But the temple of the Lord, which is His church, has been under construction now for almost 2,000 years. It says that it groweth unto a holy temple unto the Lord. And as the temples of the ancients were intended to bring glory to their God, so also we're to bring glory to the living God in the spiritual temple by our lives. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 12 through 13, it talks about the different materials that can be used to build. Gold and silver and precious stones, or wood and hay and stubble. Two very different kinds of building materials. And the question we need to ask ourselves is, what kind of building material are we? Are we bringing glory to God by the lives that we live? Are we dependent on something like they were in Shiloh, or like they were in Jerusalem, just our mere presence is of value? Or are those lives the kind of lives that are to be the kind of stones that would bring glory unto God? The Bible warns that all these materials will be tried by fire, and those that are truly precious will endure, and those that are otherwise will be carried away, burned away. And so think about that holy temple. You know, I like to go see great architectural structure. In fact, it wasn't too long ago, I was over at Durham and saw that big church they built over there on that campus. And it is a glorious building. Someday I might like to take a trip to Europe and see the Parthenon, or see some of those great churches that were built by man. I know they say they were built to glorify God. And for some people that may have been so, but a lot of times they were really built for other purposes, to bring glory unto man. All those beautiful buildings, one by one, are all made of material things, and in the end they will all be burned up. The most glorious temple that ever exists is the spiritual temple of the Lord's church, of which we ourselves can be stones. A temple that will endure forever. Well, are you part of that temple? If you're part of that temple, are you one of the stones that bring that temple glory?